here on March 23rd, 2011. I want to tell you that last Sunday, my good friend, Heather E. Coleman, who's always promoting me, I don't know why, but she pointed me to an article by Brian Solis. And the topic was influence versus popularity. And I'll be blunt, this article was unreadable. I couldn't read it. And you don't have to read it because I finally did read it, and I'm going to give you my version, whether I understood it properly or not. Here's point number one, and I'm going to talk fast because I wrote so much about it. Here's point number one, popularity sucks. Yeah, what does popularity mean? It means you're trying to sell your soul so you can follow the crowd. It means you do all kinds of stupid things just so you can fit in. So you don't want to be popular. No smart person wants to be popular. What you want to be is influential. That means that you shape, I'm quoting Brian, you shape the agenda of your community. You don't run after them. They follow you. And you know what Brian says about that? He says, having a lot of friends on Facebook doesn't mean you have influence. And having a lot of followers on Twitter doesn't mean you have influence. You can participate in a lot of community events online, but that doesn't mean you have influence, according to Brian Solis. You know what means you have influence? Retweets. RTs. But there's a big problem there. Hewlett-Packard analyzed 22 million tweets. And you know what they found? They found that people are lazy. They don't like to retweet. It's too much work. So if you want to be influential, the thing you have to do, the challenge for you, is to overcome that inertia. And how do you do that? Well, you don't have to be smart. Brian tells you that. He says lots of uninformed people carry a lot of social power. What you need most is compelling content. I know I'm going on, but this is an important topic, isn't it? Anyway, the question then is, how do you have compelling content? Brian Solis doesn't tell you, but I found someone else who did, and you can tell from his name that he knows. His name is at Paleo Lifestyle. And he's one of these meat guys, okay? And he thinks that Steve Pavlina is a total ignoramus, but he admits that Steve is a very influential man online. I don't read him regularly, but I've come across him, and maybe you have too. Anyway, this is how Paleo Lifestyle explains popularity or the influence of a guy like Steve. Excuse me, it's just so exciting, I'm getting all confused. He says, people will believe you if you tell a story that seems to explain everything, and all the parts of the story fit together. A big story with no loose ends makes it seem like you know a lot. Number two, you got to eat your own dog food. You have to believe in those ideas yourself. And number three, you need a lot of cheerleaders. He doesn't tell you how to get those, but once you got them, they'll attack anyone who disagrees with you, and that scares away the opposition. When there's nobody else disagreeing with you, you seem like you're the only one. You're the thing. You're the way it is. Okay, and I'll just go on a little longer. I found another article. I just want you to know how good a researcher I am. I found another article that explained how Thomas Jefferson took control of the University of Virginia. He went to the first planning session with a detailed plan. He had drawings. He had a budget. He had a curriculum, and he had the names of the teachers he wanted to recruit. He had everything. Everything was done. The natural thing for the other people there to do was to complain about the details, but he carried the strategic plan. They weren't going to do everything themselves after he'd done it. So all you have to do to be influential, this is the end, is to answer a big question and cover all the angles. Other people are too lazy to do it themselves. They're going to be ready to follow you. And I'm going to add that the more simple-minded your story is, the easier it is for them to follow you. And that's why you should follow me on Indie Andy. What show is this?
The Recruiting Animal Show!
Amen. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. Jerry, just so everyone knows, Jerry didn't even tell me that he's not coming today. He's got a meeting or something important, you know. And he gives me Andy. Andy is the shouter, okay? Thank you, Andy.
My wife walked in for lunch. I didn't have a chance to preface her on that, so, you know.
You were scared of your wife. Okay, well, you know, I got a guy coming on the show today. He's the guest, and he knows how to deal with women. He told me a lot yesterday when I spoke to him. His name is Jack Tirana. Jack Tyrannosaurus Rex, are you there?
Hello, Animal. I'm here. How you doing, my friend?
Yeah, you look up. Animal. Shouting, okay? You don't have to shout. Okay? Come on.
Animal.
Speak.
Animal.
What?
Are you there?
I'm here.
It's me, JD.
Oh. I thought that was Jack. Is Jack here?
No.
Is the
Jack is in
the
house.
Huh? Oh, JD, what do you want? The guest isn't even here.
I have to call in and tell you that you absolutely have to redo last week's fourth anniversary show. It was terrible.
I'm not going to do another show again.
Yeah, you have to. You know, the intro got me all excited. Jerry was screaming. He was great. And then you had the show about some bland recruiting tips, and you have to do
it
again.
You know what? It's a recruiting show, JD. Get out of here. It's a recruiting show.
Listen, don't get mad at me.
Go away, man.
Listen, don't get mad. I'm just trying to help you. You know, some people say they don't learn anything on your show, but it's entertaining. And you know what? Last week's show wasn't even entertaining.
Okay, thank you very much.
Is Jack here?
Okay,
listen,
Jack.
Animal, why don't you cut it down to half an hour? You really think that this guy today is going to be able to hold the attention for a full hour?
I hope so.
Well, I don't know.
Okay, get it, beat it. Go away, okay?
Wait. One more thing. Can I say one more thing?
Get one last thing, come on!
I want an ad. I'm a regular, and I deserve to get it free.
You're not a regular. Go away. Beat it now, okay?
Listen, I was there at the first show.
Yeah, I know, but get out of here! I'll give you an ad. Here's your ad. Wait a sec. Let me see. I've got something here for you, JD. Okay, beat it. You're wrecking my show. Okay, go away. Jack, I'm sorry. You know, I got open lines. The jerks all call in, sometimes at the beginning. Are you here?
No problem. I'm right here, Animal.
Okay, are you on a proper phone? Don't make me start that after talking with this other guy, JD.
Why? Are you not hearing me well? Am I not coming over loud?
I don't know. It doesn't sound like you're on a speakerphone to me. Are you?
All right, hold on. I'll try the other one.
Jeez.
Mr.
Terrible.
Animal.
Yeah, okay. You there?
Is that working better?
Let's try it. Can everybody else hear him? Can everybody hear this guy?
I can.
Okay, good. We're just going to go. Okay. Jack Tirana. Jack Tirana. T-E. How do you spell your last name?
T-E-R-R-A-N-A.
You hear how he's had to say, he had to think it over first. TempWorks Jack on Twitter. You work for TempWorks. We're going to talk a lot about your business. I'm going to introduce you, because you got some interesting things to talk about. We had a lot of boring stuff already. JD Jason Davis called in. Anyway, I'm just going to introduce you quickly, and we'll go to some topics, and then we'll come back to your bio and your company a little later on, okay? This is how you introduced yourself to me. You told me, I'm a garbage man's son from New York City, one of six children. And I thought you were going to give me a sob story, but you told me you're very successful. You've been in staffing for 16 years. Most of the time, you've been lending money to staffing firms that send out people on contract. So temp firms, you loan them money to cover their payrolls until the client companies, the hiring managers, pay. So your title is VP of TempWorks.com, and you're working for the famous Greg Dorgarian. Everything true so far?
Absolutely. I'm with you.
Okay, great. Okay, so we're going to come back to that in detail, but the first thing I want to talk about is how to get new business, okay? You told me some pretty inflammatory stuff yesterday. You said if you think you're going to get new business with social media and SEO, that's just BS. People don't care about any of that crap. You want to talk about that a bit?
I'd love to.
Well, I'm waiting.
Okay. Well, there's a big move on here. You know, let's get a bunch of people following us on Twitter. Let's 1,000 friends on Facebook. The popularity thing, like you alluded to earlier. I'm saying, in my experience in sales, that stuff is all worth a hill of beans, and it's nothing, and it's meaningless. And to me, it's all about relationships, getting in front of people, selling yourself, and being honest and upfront with your client sitting across the desk.
Okay,
and
I'll just point out something. I looked at your LinkedIn profile. It's just got your name on it. Is there some reason? Personally, I think that's dumb. I think you're the one who's dumb.
Okay, well, listen, I just signed up for that thing about 48 hours ago.
Yeah, you're not behind the curve, eh? You're not behind the curve, eh? You're not behind the curve. Okay, let me go on a little more. You said what you have to do to get sales is get in front of the prospect and say, I'm going to do it better than anyone else, and they have to fall in love with you. What does that mean?
That's right. As we talked about yesterday, Animal, a lot of this stuff can relate exactly to romantic.
Yeah, but yesterday was when you weren't choking. Yesterday you weren't choking, okay? Go ahead.
Right. So I equate a lot of this stuff to romantic relationships just the same. You hear about the horror stories, people dating online, people meeting online, girls in Germany, guys in the Ukraine, they get together, they're both 900 pounds, and it's a disaster, mess and a dress, right? So what I'm saying, same thing in the business world. I want to get in front of people. I want to razzle-dazzle them, wine and dine them, and I want to show them that I am different than the 900 other guys that have every fact and figure about the employment and unemployment index in the U.S. No one cares. They can look that stuff up themselves if they want to. You're not an expert. It's ridiculous. What you want to do is spend your time building relationships with people, and that is what's going to make you successful. As you just said, I have nothing on my LinkedIn. 72 hours ago, I didn't have a LinkedIn.
Do you want me to congratulate you? Okay, look, just calm down a bit, okay? You know, I prepped everybody that you're a great talker, and, you know, just like everybody else, you're kind of letting me down early in the game. So let me see. What did you tell me yesterday? You said, I think this is what you were just relating to. You know how they tell you to send articles to people and send the – you said, look, you can send them all the employment statistics that you want every week. They don't care about that. You said you have to have an introduction to the decision makers and play golf with the guy's brother, and you better take him and his wife out for a nice steak every once in a while. Is that what you're talking about?
That's what I'm talking about.
Well, Kimmy, I don't understand. How do you get business? Tell me.
Very simply, you have to offer something that nobody else is offering them. And in most cases, that's pretty much honesty and an actual relationship. And again, the people that are – their goal is instead of getting business, closing the business, it's to come off as sophisticated and as corporate as possible. And I just don't buy into any of that. To me, that stuff doesn't work. And there's plenty of those guys who I'm cruising past in the sales process who they're beautiful. They got – Brooks Brothers suit, they're buttoned up great, they make a great presentation, they're on Twitter, Facebook, and every other thing you can be on, and guess what? Someone else is closing the business in front of them.
And why's that?
Because, again, people, when people are buying something, when people are ordering something, they want to know that they're not wasting their time and their money. And so if you get in front of people and you're serious and you're legitimate and you're honest, again, honesty. You know that little tip I'll tell you what.
You know what? You're another one of these guys who dazzled me the day before. You get on my show, and I have to read your own words back to you. Otherwise, we're going to sink like the Titanic, okay? So here's what you said. Is it important to meet the client? Yes, okay, right? You remember that one?
Yes.
Remember the guy who was trying to, you know, start a company, but, you know, you went out to meet him and you got a surprise? Want to tell that story, or should I tell
it? Yeah, the guy who was trying to open up a temporary staffing company in a broom closet where he was the janitor's assistant at a school. Yes, that one?
So, yeah, you told me it's important to go out and meet the people because this guy called you up. He wanted to borrow some money or he wanted you to fund him. And when you got there, he was a janitor at a school, and a guy came in while during your meeting with him with a name on his shirt, Sid, told him to get back to work.
No, this guy wasn't the janitor. His boss was the janitor at a school.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Okay?
Yeah. Okay, so that's why it's important to go out and meet people, right?
Yes.
He also told me you want to know if they're driving a shitty car and it looks like they're living in it, right?
Absolutely. The big question, Animal, is he or is he not a Gavon?
Okay. Yeah, you know, I'm dying here. Does anybody have a question for Jack? Jack, let's go back to, you know what, I got all the funny things you told me. I wrote them all down. I could just feed them back to you. But let's
check
start.
Check the Twitter stream, Animal.
Yeah, I will. Thank you, Maureen. Thank you for not giving me the questions yourself, okay?
All right, well, Greg says that he gets his leads from their SEO, SEM, but then he does actually get in front of them.
Yeah, okay. You know, let Greg call in himself if he's got to talk. Listen, Jack, let's take a step backward.
It's my job to interpret the Twitter stream. You've reminded
what?
Me time and time again, and that's what
you.
I'm doing.
Thank you. You know what? I already got a – okay. What does TempWorks do, Jack? Nobody knows. Okay, tell us.
TempWorks is one of the largest providers of staffing software to the industry. And we've got several different divisions, one of which finances the payrolls of temporary staffing companies nationwide.
Okay, and that's what you are. You're a moneylender, right?
Exactly.
And you are living in New York, and you focus on companies, temp companies in New York. Is that right?
I focus on temp companies nationwide, typically companies that are either A, borrowing less than $1 million or doing less than $10 million in annual sales.
Okay, now explain to people who don't work with temp, and I don't, explain to them why they would come to a company like TempWorks.
It's real simple. They've got clients. Their clients pay them every 30 to 45 days. They have to come up with payroll every 7 to 14 days, and automatically they have a cash problem and a cash flow issue. And if you're constantly trying to grow your company, you will always be behind the eight ball in terms of cash flow. Therefore, and again, as we talked about yesterday, in the temp business, you cannot miss a single payroll. And we had that great expression that you love so dearly, that I told you about, and it's absolutely true. You cannot blow a payroll in the temp business or you will quickly be out of business.
Do you want to explain why? So first of all, who are these temp people? What kind of staff? When you say it's a staffing firm, are they sending out admin people, or Jerry, who's not here today, he sends out programmers. He's got about 18 programmers out at different companies. Who are we talking about when
we're talking about temp people? Anyone from the guy who goes to and cleans up a construction site after they build something to a guy who is doing programming for IBM, anywhere from a guy making $10 an hour all the way up to a guy making $200 an hour.
Okay, so if you're the recruiter, you find these temp people, you send them out, and they're your employees, and you have to pay them every week or two, but your client, the hiring company, the employer, they pay you, after a month, you said, or a month and a half, so you can't run a company without some capital, and you guys supply the capital, right?
That's exactly right.
Why wouldn't they go to a bank?
Because banks typically don't like to lend on paper. So banks like actual collateral. They like things that they can seize and liquidate. Stocks, bonds, real estate, dirt, things like that, things that actually have substance to them, as opposed to paper, which is simply paper.
So anybody could get into the recruiting contracting business tomorrow. All they got to do is call you. Is that right?
That is more or less correct. The initial investment to open a company like this is extremely low.
How much?
The gun to your head answer for me is always $25,000, not taking into account what an entrepreneur has to live on while they're ramping up their sales.
What do you need $25,000 for if you're paying everything?
Well, if you want to get things like an office, you have to secure the proper insurances. Let's say you want to get some new furniture, some new fixtures, computers and like that. $25,000 is a fairly good round number.
Okay, and so, do you fund people who are in existence or people who just want to start up their own new companies?
Both. A lot of times you get people that they've started their business a year or two ago, they're really starting to grow, and now they need some cash flow.
This is an interesting guest, Animal.
Okay, well, you take over then.
No, this is an interesting guest. He's talking about the money thing. Everybody's interested in it. The Twitter stream's going crazy.
Well, okay, give me, what are they asking? What do they want to know?
Let's see.
Okay, don't, no, I'll
tell them at Mark Sullivan.
When you get a question, knock on the door again, okay?
I have a question, Animal.
Go ahead.
how has the money business, the money side of this business changed in since the recession started? People are going out of business. People are losing money, probably not paying you back as often. Have your standards changed? What do you look for?
You know what, Dave, before he answers, let me tell you, he wrote an article, or Greg did. It's called What Recession? Payroll Funder Expands Amid Temp Job Boom. I guess they got rid of their full-time employees and they went temp. Is that what happened, Jack? What does that mean?
A couple of things happened. It's a great question. The first thing that really started the downfall of borrowing money from banks was the Patriot Act after 9/11. And essentially what happened there was banks got even more conservative because they essentially had to track where their money was going to avoid the laundering that the terrorists were perpetrating. So that was the one thing that started it. Then, of course, the crash of 08 was kind of the nail in the coffin for people. You had asked earlier, can't somebody just walk into a bank and borrow money? That was actually possible, provided you had good credit and some decent collateral. But nowadays, it's very, very difficult to get your hands on the money from a bank.
Dave, do you have a follow-up? Follow-up, Dave?
I don't think that answered my question, anyways.
Well, just challenge him. Come on.
My question was, is how have lending standards changed because of the economy? You're telling me about 9/11. I don't really see the connection.
Yeah, and then but after that, the crash of 08 has further restricted borrowers to unless you live under a rock, you read the paper every day, it's obvious that the credit criteria has gotten extremely strict. And even after the TARP Act and a full gush of funds from the government, they still haven't loosened their purse strings. And much of that TARP money from the banks is used to buy other banks.
That's the answer to why folks are having a harder time getting money, which I understand. But actually, my question was, from your perspective, how have your lending standards changed since the recession began? Because I'd imagine, maybe I'm wrong, but I'd imagine that people are not paying you back as often or as quickly as they used to.
Good question.
I think the lenders, the payroll funding lenders and the staffing industry lenders, they've tightened up like everyone else in response to the people that they borrow money from. But by and large, our ability to lend has not been compromised at all. And I would say that's true for most of the lenders. Now, there are a handful of companies in the industry who have kind of folded up or have gotten so conservative that people are no longer inclined to borrow from them because they've got more restrictions.
I don't know if you don't want to answer the question, if I'm not asking it correctly, like one or the other, but I guess I'm asking, are the rates of repayment changing? How is it changing your business? I'm not asking.
The DSO. Has the DSO changed because companies are paying their bills slower?
What's DSO?
I would say that. That's days sales outstanding. That's the average number of days it takes for a staffing company to collect from their customers.
What is that number?
That average, if you call the ASA, I believe right now it's at about 36 days.
That seems fast, but okay.
Is that it, Dave?
That's it. Thank you very much.
Adam,
sure,
Greg, is Greg Green? He's pulling the floor out from under you on Twitter. Just so I don't want to make you nervous, but your boss is contradicting everything you say just on the Twitter stream. Okay.
Okay.
Adam, can you hear me?
I'm gonna figure out how to log
in.
I
have a question. What kind of skin do you want the borrower to have in the game? Say, you know, he comes to you, he says, I want $25,000 to start a business. Are you interested in that guy if he doesn't have any skin in the game?
The skin in the game is essentially this: they have to conform to some things that we've got. I mean, obviously, if a guy is a credit criminal, he's not borrowing money. If his background check comes back horribly, we're not giving him money. If he's got horrible clients, bad debtors that with bad Paydex scores and DMB reports, we're not lending him money. So there are some. It's not like anybody can just walk in and we're
okay.
Gonna give
so let's
him
say a guy's got good credit. He's got a credit score of 800. You know, he looks clean. Do you want him to have any money in the game?
Absolutely not. Not important. If the guy is a solid
really?
Citizen and he pays his bills, I'll lend money to that guy all day long.
Is that
really?
It, Maureen? Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
very
yeah,
different
yeah.
from the bank banking.
Adamo, am I turned on yet?
Yeah, you're on.
I've been yelling for 10 minutes.
I haven't heard you, Ace. That's Mike A. Stringer. He's your ace in the hole. At what's your URL? HumanCapitalConsultants.com.
That's correct.
Okay, go ahead. You know what? I know you're on a lousy phone. That's why I didn't call on you, but go ahead.
I apologize. I'm in the car. So
okay.
My impression of your industry is that it would be cheaper to borrow from John Gotti. So can you talk about pricing?
This guy is
you
John
borrow,
Gotti.
I'll tell you.
Didn't
another
you hear the language he's using?
Percentages, how much?
Yeah, John Gotti, I think he croaked a couple of years back, but the point is he may still be lending. I think his son is still in it. Our rate,
just
I mean,
so
we know
the guy who's the guy who's talking, he calls himself a Guido, so he's not making a negative ethnic remark towards you.
What interest do you charge on those loans?
Interest
hey.
Varies. Typical rates are anywhere from 1% up to 5% of sales if it's a slow payer.
1% to 5% of sales.
Yep. It all depends on how quickly the receivables are collected.
And what
based on overall
what amount of time?
The average guy in our portfolio who is collecting from their clients in 30 to 45 days probably pays anywhere from 2.5% to 4%.
On top of the 1 to 5% of sales?
No. That would be what their rates look like.
On average.
On average, yes. Again, depends on the quality of the debtors. It depends on the credit, what their rates, what their volume is. There's a couple of factors that go into the pricing.
So
okay,
are you taking ownership interest?
Let my case stringer finish. We can barely hear him before his phone conks out. Mike.
Again, sorry for my phone. So do you require that your customers bring all of their business to you? Because I've seen that.
Absolutely not. That's not a requirement. That is a requirement with some lenders out there. We do not require it. It is.
Can you repeat
only
the question, Jack? Repeat the question because I don't think everyone could hear it.
Okay. What Mike's wanting to know is, do we require that if we have do business with a company, do we require that all of their receivables are financed through us? Some lenders have that requirement, and the answer in our case is no.
Okay. So how does that work? So they've got some clients that they handle on their own, and they pay out the payroll for, let's say, half of their business, and the other half of the business you carry. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Okay. Mike, anything else on that? You charge, you told the guy he's a Shylock, right? Is there anything else you want to say to back that up?
Well, there's not much difference between them and a Shylock, but that's fine. I won't disrespect his business.
Why do you say that? Jack, why is he saying that to you, that you're a Shylock? Are you charging too much interest?
What's too much interest? I'm not really sure. I mean, you know, obviously I compete on all these deals against the Gambinos, but, you know, we're right up there. Usually we're able to beat them on service.
Some idiot is rumpling paper in front of his or her phone. Can you believe it? You know, week after week, the same thing. I can't stand it. Now, let me ask you something. You just said you deal with with clients nationally across the United States, but you also told me that most temp business is local. Is that true?
I would say that is true, except when you're getting into IT and travel nursing. I think most temp staffing companies do most of their business on a local level.
If somebody wants to talk, if you want to say something, tell me who you are.
Resume Strategy is asking on Twitter, what criteria does he want to see before he's going to fund somebody? What is he looking for from the startup guy?
That's a great question. From the actual borrower, you're looking for someone who's got a conscience when it comes to their credit. Doesn't have to be perfect. We don't really care. We're not score-driven. But if somebody has stiffed everyone that's ever given them credit, we're not interested, nor is any other lender interested in lending the money. Unless you go to a true factor who cares only about the clients or the debtors. We also like to look at the debtors, the strength of the debtors, and the concentration of your accounts. So if you've
okay,
got,
the debtor is
if,
the employer, right?
That's correct.
So if somebody comes to you, you're saying you want to see who his clients are and check them out. Is that right?
That is correct.
But you also told us that you'll take somebody who doesn't have any clients yet. Is that right?
Absolutely, all day.
Cool. Okay. Isn't that a bit contradictory?
Not really, because if they don't have any clients, when they start adding clients, you're going to examine. Part of our service is that we credit check and analyze all of their customers going forward and the ones that they're currently doing business with, if they are doing business with. And so what you have to do, getting back to what is the criteria, if you're not a AAA rated Fortune 500 company. We want to see what kind of business you are, and we're gonna do all the normal credit analysis. If almost any lender has an issue with concentration, meaning if you've got one client in your portfolio that's 80% of your entire book of business, that's a very high concentration. Most lenders have some sort of a restriction, whether it's 50%, 25% with one customer.
What's yours?
It really varies. It depends based upon a number of factors, the size of the company, the stability, the lawsuits pending. I mean, there's probably 50 different things that you can look at to judge the health of a company.
Do most companies have lawsuits pending?
I would say yes, but most of them really don't matter for our purposes.
I have another question.
Go ahead,
What's
Mike.
That?
I'm sorry, Maureen wasn't finished.
What do you mean it doesn't matter for your purposes?
I mean, most lawsuits, we don't, that's just one minor criteria for us. Most lawsuits, unless it's something absolutely horrific and it's a small company that looks like they can't get by that lawsuit or lawsuits,
mm-hmm.
then that's the only time it'll factor into our decisions on credit.
So you sort of figure a lawsuit is just a kind of like a cost of doing business.
No doubt about it.
Hmm. That's interesting. I have one more question. Carla Porter wants to get in here. Go ahead. Carla Porter wants to get in here. She wants to ask Animal if you said you were learning about women yesterday with this guest.
Yes, I was. But I don't know if he
can
repeat
everything
he said. Do you want to elaborate?
Carla wants to know.
Carla, is there? Are you there, Carla? Is she on Twitter or is she here?
She's on Twitter.
Look, here's what we know. I can get to it later, but, you know, he told me in sales, he relates sales a lot to, romantic relationships. I don't know. We can get to it later. You told me a story, Jack, about an ugly guy chasing a girl. Do you remember that?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So she doesn't want to go out with you. The strategy there is I'm going to charm your pants off because I'm a great guy, right? And you work on her. It's a process. Is that what you told me, or should he just give up? I think that's some of the stuff we were talking about.
Yes. You filed it all the way, Animal. And, yes, that's absolutely true. And I think there's a lot of this stuff converts directly over to how do I get clients in the business world.
Yeah, Jerry would say I didn't ask an open-ended enough question. I mean, but Carla did. I was waiting for you to answer, Carla, and I had to answer her, okay? I was looking for you to pick up on what I said. Okay, let's go back to the business questions, then we'll get back to the sales questions. Okay, Carla, somebody have a business question. Mike Astringer wanted to ask something else. Mike, are you still there or are you dead now? Okay, he's gone. Okay, now you know what? Like, the kind of stuff that I was really interested in was, like, you told me, in your business, the shit is always going to hit the fan at some point. If you're lending something to somebody, sooner or later there's going to be a problem. Is that true? Sort of like what Maureen just said. Am I right?
100% true.
Okay.
At some point in time, it will always hit the fan, which is exactly why the smart lenders out there, lending to the guy with no business, no receivables, you want a guy that is a solid citizen and not a guy who has stiffed every creditor he's ever worked with. Because when it does hit the fan, the guy who has stiffed everybody is going to stiff you. He's going to stop taking your phone calls, stop communicating, and you're dead. As opposed to the guy who's conscientious, he's got a good credit score, he pays everybody back, he's not an angel, he's not perfect, but he's a conscientious guy. Maybe he has some late payments, maybe he's missed a couple of payments on this and that, but he's an entrepreneur and he's a fighter, as opposed to the guy who doesn't care about you or anybody else that's given him a dollar.
What's the biggest hit you've ever taken?
The biggest one I've ever witnessed is a seven-figure number.
You took a seven-figure hit?
The company I worked for did, yes.
Okay. Thanks. Maureen, is that you typing into the phone?
No.
Okay. Oh, that's me. I didn't realize I was back on. Sorry.
Mike's there.
Okay. Mike, did you have another question? Because I'll have one, but I'll let you go first.
Thank you. So when a customer is invoiced working through you, do you invoice the customer or does the staffing firm invoice the customer?
We invoice the customer, and the invoices go out with a...
And the customer is the employer. The customer is the employer, not the recruiter, right?
Correct.
And the employer pays you, not the recruiter. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry. I just want to make it clear.
So the point that I was making is, again, that's sort of my preference for borrowing from John Gotti, because if I'm a new business owner, I think I might find it a little embarrassing to my customer that you want to check their credit, you're going to be doing the invoicing, you're going to be doing the receivables. I mean, what's sort of left for me to do? That's why I've never gone out to a factoring company,
because
I would find
embarrassing in front of my customer. Mike, you're doing the part of the business that only Mike can do. The other stuff, funding the stuff, sending an invoice, anyone, a chimpanzee can be trained to do that stuff. But you're delivering the goods, you're delivering the talent, and nobody else can do that as good as you.
So that's a great sales line, but doesn't that sort of lend to my client that you know, I'm too small to even handle my own payroll?
Absolutely not. If I had to worry about sending your invoices, collecting, doing all these other things, you and everybody else, I would be a crummy recruiter, and I respect you so much, I wouldn't let you work with me because I'd be so crummy.
But I can hire a $10 an hour resource to do that for me.
Yeah, or you can hire someone like who does it on a grand scale and does it for hundreds and hundreds of companies and earns millions and millions of dollars for doing it. Or
I understand the point still remains.
Here
I would find
Jack, hold on a second. Here's a question that we'll decide it. Do any big, respectable companies use services like yours? Or, I mean, like Mike's worried that if someone shows up, because if Mike uses your services and he gets a new client, he has to give them a contract, and they see that they're going to be paying you, and you're going to check their credit, right? So they sign on with you at the same time they sign on with him, right?
Yep.
Okay, so are there any big companies, big, respectable, impressive companies that are going to be doing that as well? Or is it a sign, like Mike says, is it a red flag that, you know, you're a nobody?
Well, I'll answer it this way. There are hundreds of companies out there that do staffing, that do hundreds of millions of dollars a year in staffing, are publicly traded, and use companies like mine.
Mike?
I have no response. That's great. I guess that's personally why I haven't done it, because I would find the whole experience a little embarrassing.
Yeah, but what he's telling you is that you've got a narrow mind. You don't understand how things work, okay? He's educating you.
How many days do you take? Some people choose to go down. I personally have not made my mortgage payment to make payroll, but you know that's just the way I like to do it.
Okay.
Well,
do you want to fight with him a bit? Hey, hold on, Jack. If you were going to sell this guy, what would you say? I want to see you in action. You got Mike Astringer here. You know, he's no pussy. Come on. Sell him.
I would say very simply, you don't have enough pain yet. So when you get to that point where your business is suffering because you can no longer grow because you've already blown the mortgage payment and now you're behind in your mortgage, you're ruining your credit. So the big goal of getting proper financing 3 to 5 years from now, when you've got a legitimate, profitable business with lots of financial statements and history, now your credit is going to be so rotten and ruined that you're not going to get that financing that you should be getting.
So in six years of being in business, I think that my business is stable and producing revenue. And, you know, again, for me, it's once you put a contractor on, 30 days down the road, you're not even thinking about how you're going to make payroll anymore. It's that first 30 days. And to me, I'd rather sacrifice that first 30 days versus having to have my client know that, yeah, I did a great job coming into the office and selling you on my services, but guess what? I can't really afford it. So I have to have this outside company check your credit, make sure you're worthy of working with them. And then, by the way, they're going to send you an invoice and receive the check.
Well, there is almost no circumstances where the person that is doing the ordering from you that you're working with to make placements, the hiring manager, is also the same person that's getting and submitting for check requisitions to pay your invoices. So AP and the hiring people are completely distant.
I disagree. I'm sending those invoices to HR for them to approve them, and then they send them off to AP. So they're seeing my invoices. Of course they are.
Yeah, but are they? It's AP, the people that are actually stroking out the checks, getting you your payments. And again, I think that your clients, if they're getting great service from you on the stuff that they really care about, they don't care who where the money's coming from, who's sending the invoice. Why would they? It has zero bearing on their business.
But again, I don't want to hijack the show, so I'll agree to disagree with you. But I just would – it's why I've never gone to a service like yours, because I just – I'd find it a little embarrassing to have to say to a client, I can't afford the payroll, the contractors that I convinced you to let me provide.
You know, Mike, I tell you, I would believe – I would buy into and agree with your story. And then 02 came along. In 2000, a guy who launched a billion-dollar – started the company in 89, took it public in 95 – sold out, took his parachute out of there in 2000, brought it up to $1 billion and 1,000 stores nationwide in staffing. The guy sat out his two-year non-compete. In 02, I called the guy and I said, are you coming off the sideline? He said, I am, and I definitely want to work with you, and I definitely want to factor these invoices. This company today is a publicly traded, the new company, publicly traded staffing company. This guy is still with the same factoring relationship that I signed him up for 9 years ago. So, again, this guy has made, when he took his parachute out of that company, he grabbed $125 million on the way out. So I think there's a lot of staffing professionals that will tell you this is not only something to think about, it's the only way to go if you want truly uninhibited growth.
That was pretty good.
How often do you see that growth? How often
What's
do you
that?
See that growth with your client base?
You see it all the time. I mean, there are great stories. I would say probably 1 out of 10 companies that come on board are successful beyond what, you know, you could by any, you know, and successful, it means different things to different people, but I would say fully 1 out of 10 have meteoric growth and success.
Hold on.
Would you say, Hamlin?
The answer to that question is that case is an outlier, obviously, because most staffing companies don't go public. There's no way that could be a representation of most of the companies.
About going public? No. I'm talking about just
give an example. She said, is that indicative of the customer base? And you said, sure.
Oh, I absolutely think so. I think if you went to almost all of the huge staffing companies out there, at some point they would tell you, we went with an outside lender who is not necessarily a bank offering up single-digit rates. So I think that's indisputable.
That may be true and it may be indisputable, but that's not what she asked.
Resume Strategy is asking, whose brand goes on the invoice?
The name of the staffing company.
Okay, do you want to answer? You're not talking to nobody here. That's Dave Manister, the kingfish of ERE. You want to convince this guy, okay? So he's saying that you gave an odd, unrepresentative example when you defeated Mike. You said, look, if you want to grow, you know, if you using a factor like you, a money lender like you, is a sign of growth, not a sign of that you're nobody, that you're a small rinky-dink company. So Dave is challenging you now. He's saying that company you gave as an example, because it's a public company, which is very unusual in this business, he's saying that's not a fair example. You have to give some better example.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm just the last person who asked a question, I'm not sure who it was, asked if that company was, you know, representative of the entire client pool. And it's just obviously not. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, successful companies don't use factoring. Factoring is an important tool. I'm just saying that company is a great, maybe a great example for sales purposes, but it's not indicative of the larger client base.
What is that larger client base looking like? Maybe that's a better question.
Yeah, okay. Who's asking those questions? Is that
Rebecca? Yes.
Rebecca.
As a rule, I guess I'm not really following that example, and I would say that success is absolutely – that is a very common scenario when someone has unlimited cash to grow their business.
No. Rebecca is asking you, okay? Rebecca Sargent is asking you, who is your average customer? That's what she wants to know.
Thank you.
Okay. The average customer is basically, it's like this with a bank. A bank does not get excited for your business because your receivables. And until you're in need of about $1 million, remember, their interest rates are very low. For them to make money, they can't lend $100,000. They start getting excited with your company once you need to borrow $1 million. If you need to borrow $1 million as a staffing company, you're probably doing sales somewhere around $10 million. Okay? Now, if you're doing $10 million in sales, you probably have a little bit of history, and you can probably give these guys some financials and some history, 2 or 3 years or 5 years of financials, so they can look at it. Also, if you're generating, if you've got a business that's doing $10 million in sales, the owner probably has some fairly decent net worth accrued now where he can go into a bank and he's got some actual collateral. So to answer your question, most of our customers are people that are doing $10 million in sales and less. And most of them are doing much less. Most of them are doing less than $5 million. And so the bankable option and cheaper money is not available to them. So that is sort of typical in all of these factoring companies. Then you've also
Let me ask you: are most of them doing less than $4 million?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say
Jerry told me to tell you. He didn't actually put it that way, but he said, "Look, any small recruiting firm that bills $1 million a year is doing pretty good." So, what percentage of your clients bill over $1 million a year? Let me put it that way.
You don't have to answer
if it's too much info.
No. Is he talking about perm direct hire stuff, or is he talking
temp,
about temp?
Contract? What we're talking about. He's an IT recruiter. You know, he says he can only really put out about 18 people at a time, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
One person.
I would say if you're in this day and age, given pay rates and what they are, if you're doing less than $1 million in sales, you are a very, very small contract company.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So,
you know, I don't know. You're getting slippery on me, and we're just trying to look for the average profile. So the average profile of your clients are over $1 million, but we don't know, like, $1 million to $4 million or $1 million to $5 million. That's a huge range.
I would say just around $2 million, either side of $2 million.
Great. Is everybody happy with that answer? Yeah?
Yeah.
Anybody else got another question?
Maureen, make sure you read his boss insulting me on Twitter. Read that one out loud too.
But the other thing is, guys, just to move that back a little bit, 10 years ago that same number was $1 million. Again, a lot of this stuff has a bearing on what the pay scales are. So it used 10 years ago it was impressive if you were a $2 million company. Today that might not be the case.
Boy, I'm glad Jerry's not here today, man. He would be very insulted by what you just said, I think.
Okay,
but
I understand you loan to women. That point's been made a couple times in the Twitter streams, that a good percentage of your business are to women. Is that true?
I think the majority of people that I don't know that you could put it. I've never done an analysis from a gender perspective.
If you had just a gut analysis, what would you say your percentage is for women lenders, female lenders, or female borrowers?
40%, I would say.
40%.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this question. A woman shows up. She wants to borrow $50,000 to start a recruiting business. She's got good credit, but that's all she has. She doesn't have any profit and loss statement. She doesn't have any assets. You're going to lend her $50,000 because she has a good credit score?
I'll lend her $200,000. Absolutely.
Because she has a good credit score?
Just because if she's got good customers and a good credit, if she gets approved.
She needs
a
business. What you're saying is she needs a – I'm talking about somebody that shows up on your door and says, I want to start a business.
And, in other words, they want $50,000 unsecured?
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not the type of lending that we do.
Okay. I understood you did do that lending early on in this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Guy wanted to start a recruiting business out of a broom closet.
The kind of business that Jerry runs is permanent placement. He's talking about Jack.
No, you don't know what Jerry does then, Kingfish. Jerry plays contract people. Yeah, you've been here listening to him for like 2 years, and you still don't know. Wake up! Okay?
Don't tell Jerry that I tune out when he talks.
You take the cotton balls out of your
Now,
eyeballs.
There's a woman named Dallas or Delice, D-A-L-Y-C-E, and she asked a question I just don't understand, but I'll put it over to Jack just in case he does.
Wait a minute. We're way past the advertising time.
Okay,
you're going to advertise for anybody
second.
Today?
Yeah, I'm going to advertise
People
for Heather E. Coleman.
People have paid their monies.
Yeah, Heather E. Coleman has she's got a new site, and I can't remember it, but ask her, at Heather E. Coleman, C-O-L-E-M-A-N, on Twitter, at Heather E. Coleman. She's always promoting me. She's got a special new service. It measures your influence. That's why I guess she referred me to that article. Your popularity and your social media popularity and influence, which Jack says doesn't mean anything. I tend to agree with him. But anyway, she's very nice. She's always telling, you know, embarrassingly nice things about me. And you can go and ask her what her site is, Heather E. Coleman. But I want to put this question out by Delice or whatever her name is. See, that's what, when you got a goofy name, people can't figure it out. You can't communicate it. But she said, is there anything else Jack's clients receive other than money? I'm like, he takes them out for a steak. He already said that. I mean, you don't teach them how to be recruiters, right?
No, we don't.
You give them software, don't you?
Industry best software, and we also give them all the back office services, and we do all the payroll taxes, the invoicing, and all the credit work on their customers. So it never comes to be that they're getting into bed with the wrong folks, giving them money, giving them employees, and not getting paid.
Okay, actually, that was a good question, Delice. Sorry, I insulted you before he answered. Okay. Did you want to say anything else about that? Or Maureen, did you have something else to say?
No, but Mike seems to want to keep making the point that thinking the way he does doesn't mean that he is a control freak.
Okay, Mike isn't a control freak, and if he is, that's not an insult. That means he's a good
businessman.
I have a lot of respect.
Right, but it's an interesting conversation.
Well,
you know what, I'll tell you.
Can I ask a question?
No, I have to say something first. Okay? The one thing I don't respect, I respect Mike Astringer. He's a good radio personality, but he wants to hide it under a bushel. He's afraid of his brand, okay? That's a big mistake. He's hiding his personality, which is his biggest asset. Now, somebody's sending me DMs. That's the direct message, Mike. I mean, Jack, you know, you might not be aware of that. But,
yes,
you know,
you.
It's a she. And I can't agree with her, but I just want to tell you what she says. He doesn't seem to have much personality. Conan is pretty good, but he's a bit boring. He doesn't seem to engage much. I don't agree. This guy, I spoke to this guy yesterday, and like he was one of the most engaging people I'd ever spoken to. He's got all kinds of funny things to say. He taught me what a Gavone is, and he told me funny stories and a lot of good sales wisdom. So he's just warming up. I want everyone to know. I think he's doing a good job now that we got, you know, just with the straight business issues. Next time he comes on, and I would have this guy back, he's going to tell you so many funny stories, you won't be able to sit there. You're going to pee your pants during the show, okay? I promise you that. But I just want you to know, Jack, the kind of feedback I'm getting while the show's going on, okay? That's not good for me. I'm just warning you.
Okay, Rebecca's
asking.
What
did I tell you? You can't embarrass me.
Here's something
okay.
I missed. Rebecca Sargent asked, what is the failure rate of staffing agencies across the industry?
You know what? She was just going to ask a question herself. Can you let her ask it? Rebecca?
That is, you know, they've got a unique perspective of the staffing industry and want to see what is that failure rate that they're seeing from their client base and what's causing it. If that doesn't take it too far offline. The other question I have is, you know, taking Mike Astringer and seeing how he builds his business based on the capital he can reinfuse into his company, do you see companies kind of get that growth spurt?
You know what? You want the guy to answer your first question before
sure.
he forgets
yeah, let me,
it?
Let me answer
sure.
the first one because that first one is one of the greatest questions that someone can ask and you can spend a show doing it. Mm-hmm. Why do companies fail? Companies fail – by and large, most people, the entrepreneurs that get out and start staffing businesses are salespeople by nature. It's the sales guys, the dreamers, the guys say, I can do this better than anybody else. They go out there, they sell, they market, they do it great, and then they get into bed with these folks. Even people that are good, creditworthy customers, they don't collect their money.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes what they do is they don't charge enough money. Their margins stink. They get into trouble with workers' comp. There are a million different reasons why they can fail. For example, I mean, one of the things I always preach, lean and mean. So you don't go out and rent a $5,000 office space when the $2,000 office space is perfectly suitable. Your clients never visit the office. Why waste money there? They also love one of the great analogies. If you want to see why businesses fail so frequently, look at the used furniture market. Used furniture, you can get more used furniture than you can new out there. It's incredible, and it's dirt cheap. Because
okay,
why?
But that's,
small business.
That's of general business. That's general business. Most recruiters are working, you know, very lean, I find. What is causing recruiters to go out of business?
I can't really speak to direct placement people. I would assume that, you know, that's – I mean, obviously, if you're doing direct placement, It's not like temp.
I'm talking
about
your client base. What would cause your client base, the contractors, to kind
of Why don't you ask him first if any of his people go out of business? Jack, do any of your clients go out of business?
Absolutely. I would say that the failure rate in lean times is probably 6 out of 10 will die a slow death, and in good times it's probably the reverse. It's probably 4 out of 10.
Okay, man, we had a long time getting to that answer. That's bad radio. Don't do this to me. Rebecca, what's your other question? And I got to tell you something. Maureen has a much better radio voice than you. You should take some lessons from her, okay? But I'll let you ask your own question instead of
her doing
it for you.
No, I'm good. I'm actually good. He answered my question.
Oh, you had another question. Ask it now.
I have a question balancing Mike's business and how he builds his business based on what he can bring in and what he can get paid and everything.
Is this complicated? Is this complicated or is it straightforward? Okay.
It's complicated, so I'll leave
it. Okay, forget it. Next time. Hey, Jack, I got something for you. So you told me, remember we ask about the shit hitting the fan all the time? You said sometimes a decent person, you know, has some financial problems and he or she, the recruiter, will call up the client company and say, don't pay Jack, send the check directly to me. And so you're paying him. And the client is, the employer is paying him too, so he's got a double payment. Is that, tell us a little bit about that. You said that's a big problem in your business, is it?
It's a big problem in the business, and this goes back to, and even the honest guys sometimes will do it. In desperate times, they take desperate steps, and yes, even the good guys can be guilty of this from time to time. And believe it or not, it's not always the worst thing for the lender. Because it may happen once. If they're conscientious guys, they're going to answer the phone. They're going to want to work it out. I was a bad boy. I had a big payable. I had to do it. I had no other way of getting the money. I'm sorry. It'll never happen again. Okay, you slap the guy on the wrist. The guy owes you $50,000. You say, listen, we're going to take it off. We're going to roll it into a loan. You're going to pay us back over a period of time. And you've kind of got a built-in extension. The guy is comfortable. He got his money. He got his relatively low-interest loan. And you've got a customer that is probably can be a pretty conscientious, decent guy who's probably growing
his
business.
Okay, I
got to
cut you off. You're going on. You told it so much fun yesterday. Now it's just boring. I got two more issues, and then we got to go. The show's over.
I told you, Animal, you should have had the show yesterday. It was
Yeah, I should have just taped it. I should have just taped it. It's been not bad. I think it's been pretty good. A lot of very informative stuff I didn't know anything about. But Indy Andy, everybody, is going to – there is an after show. Andy is going to handle it. But I want to ask you a couple of questions.
Oh, I object.
Yeah, okay. I can't handle that, okay, right now. You told me two things. One of them is that you're not desperate for business, right? And you're willing to walk away from business. And you said that's very important for a recruiter to know. Is that, do you want to talk about that a bit, or should we save that for later?
I think it's fine. It's absolutely true. It's one of the cardinal mistakes that especially new businesses make, young businesses make all the time. If you can't make money, there's no point in doing business.
So, yeah,
and,
okay. Let me go on to the next one. Last point for you, okay? Last point. You said one of the most important things to do is screw up and then apologize for it. You want to explain that? That's paradoxical.
I have this little theory that even if you don't screw up at some point in a business relationship, you ought to you ought to make it up that you screwed up just to have that opportunity to apologize to the prospect or the client. People absolutely love it. It's endearing. It's wonderful. It warms them right up, and it makes you legitimate. Now, here's the deal. The biggest problem is when people do screw up, they don't admit it. That's on the other side of the spectrum. I'm saying it's such a great tool in a relationship-building situation that if you even have to make it up that you screwed something up, it's worthwhile.
Everybody happy with that check? Thank you! Jack, I didn't say you and me have to go now. They're going to grade us. Goodbye!
All righty then.
Then they get pushed out.
Alrighty then. Who, wow. So
Andy, by the way, no offense, but you know that after show job is supposed to be mine.
Yeah, you know what? I think the key to this, Mike, I was going to tell you, is if you don't ask for it, you'll probably get it.
Yeah.
I was informed that I know there was some, sounds like there was a voting process and people selected, but I just got a call last night, and I answered the call. I knew nothing of it other than that. So the key is do not hold your hand up.
Way to step up and be handy.
Hey, man, I'm glad.
Sorry I wasn't home to answer the phone.
And I got to tell you, folks, I mean, you know, my ADD kicked in, or, I mean, some might call that a lack of interest. I have no temp business. I'm all perm, so this topic is not near and dear to my heart. I tried to maintain a engagement level during the show, but I'm happy to let somebody I'm happy to let you pontificate about such such companies, because I have zero experience with it. So yeah, so there you go. Who's here, by the way? Who do we have at the round table?
Steve Minister's here.
Okay. Dave.
Hey.
Dave Stringer's here.
I am. I'm here. This is Jeremy.
Hey, Jeremy.
In the background.
Rebecca. All right.
Greg DeGarian here in Minneapolis.
Hey, Greg. Greg.
See, I wouldn't have such a problem with these guys if I can speak. I wouldn't have such a problem with these guys if they were factoring your invoices behind the scenes. But where I start to have a problem is, you know, if you want to run a credit check on me and my company and, you know, my history of managing the finances of my business, I have no issue with that. But when you need to run a credit check on my client and my client needs to know that I had to go to you to factor a deal, that's when I start to have issue with these guys. And you know what? Business is up and down, right? It's down since the last recession. You know, I'm back to putting contractors out on billing. I'm taking that money out of my pocket. And you know what? I may make a mortgage payment later or something to do that. But to me, that's just the better option than having to go to my client and say, hey, by the way, I know I did a great job selling my services and my ability to place contractors here, but I just can't afford to pay them, so I had to go to the outside.
Well, Mike, I got the point there that, man, I mean, I guess I look at it as it's all in the way you present it. I mean, if this is just and this is from a guy who has no experience with this, but my thought was, hey, if you if this is the way you do business, you know, I've selected these guys as you know, as my partner in this, and they handle it for me, and you know, boom, boom, boom.
Well, the thing is, though, is that in the real world, factoring is valuable, but it's never something that's done from a position of strength, because they take a big chunk of the receivables for themselves.
Gotcha.
Nobody ever goes to a factor because they want to go to a factor. They go there because they're having trouble with collections for whatever reason.
Right.
And they need the help. So,
and 5% doesn't sound
trying
like
to position
much.
Trying to position it as something that is this awesome, great tool. It's a tool, but it's kind of a tool of last resort in the real world.
I got you. So these guys aren't, I mean, these guys, they're not just a payroll service. This is beyond a payroll service.
Yeah, if I could join in, this is Greg in Minneapolis.
Yeah, go ahead, Greg.
I appreciate the discussion, and you know, I agree with Mike a lot more than he probably thinks, and I didn't really mean to insult him. It's quite the contrary. I'd probably be doing the exact same thing he is in his shoes. But if you're a staffing company, and I realize a lot of the audience here is recruiters, firm recruiters especially, but if you're a staffing company and you have a high growth plan ahead of yourself, yeah, it's a lot more than just payroll funding. And, you know, you get these computer services, the payroll processing, a lot of marketing behind you. Straight up, you get one of the best online career portals for free just by signing up with us. So it's a whole lot of rocket fuel that we give to startup staffing companies. And if they are planning a lot of growth and can't finance it themselves or find it irritating to go through all that process, it can be a great thing for them. But it's not for everybody. And I probably shared Mike's perspective on the payroll funding industry itself. And by the way, I'd say the same thing about banking and mortgage industries too. Those aren't—it's not always pretty the way their agreements work either. But yeah, there's a lot more to our service. It's for somebody looking for high growth, and it's not for somebody who's wanting to run a carefully controlled small business maybe tech recruiting, where you already have more than enough cash flow going on to keep yourself going.
Hey, Greg, what percentage of the receivables you guys take as part of the factoring?
That was garbled.
Oh, yeah, that didn't come quite through. Go ahead, do that again.
I'll try that one more time. Can you tell us what percentage on average of the receivables you guys take for the factoring service?
Probably on average somewhere around 3%.
3%? Okay, that's a lot less than I thought.
Yeah, it is a lot less than I thought.
Well, hold on. 3% of the gross?
3% of the top line. That's right, the invoicing.
Okay, so that's actually a lot then.
It is,
right?
If you're taking into consideration that you might be only making 25%, once you pay the contractor and you pay your salesperson for bringing that piece of business in, you're paying another 5% off the top. I don't even know what number that turns out to be, but it's a lot. It's pretty high.
Yeah, exactly. And that's actually why I said earlier that, I mean, factoring is usually more expensive money than just taking a loan. It's just the way it works out.
It's always more expensive, but it's also unlimited. So the people that are factoring, even the people that have a choice that can get money elsewhere and spend less. So if you need $100,000 and you've got enough equity in your home, you can borrow money at about 4 points, maybe less, okay? Or you can go to a factor and spend 25 points. However, you've got an unlimited source of capital, and if and when you're in a growth mode where you're going to need that money, the problem with bank products is they're limited, and they're a finite amount. You don't have any sort of limits in the factoring. You've got as much money as your receivables are generating.
But when you're talking,
is that Jack talking?
That's Jack.
Okay, Jack.
When you talk point, are you talking percentage?
If you think of it this way, if you pay 2% every 30 days for factoring, that works out to an APR of about 24%, right?
Right.
I think that, at the end of the day, if you're growing a business, and especially with recruiters, you're growing a business for stability. Doesn't the business owner really want to take that into consideration when they take on these big clients? You put out here when companies go from a 30 to 45 to 60 days. If a business owner can't manage that risk, then why would you create a bridge for them to manage that risk when it creates an unstable environment for them internally?
Well, because a lot of that risk is really no risk at all. If you've got very good creditworthy clients and you've got some tight books and records and contracts, and if you make a placement and you are going to get paid, it's not really a risky proposition. I mean, business inherent in there is risk. You have to work with customers. In this business, if you've got the opportunities and your credit and you're working with creditworthy clients, why would you not use a lender to help you with that? Plus the fact, part of the service that we provide is all the credit research on analysis of these customers of
yours. You're protecting your own asset, though.
Absolutely.
You're protecting your asset.
And the interests are fully aligned, because by us protecting the asset, we're also protecting our client by not getting into a situation where they may take a hit.
I guess what I look at is that you're creating a false sense of security for the staffing agency. They're out there, they've got, millions of dollars billing or whatever they've got, and they think that's coming. Well, that's not money you can use. If it's not in your bank account, it's not there. And that's kind
completely,
of
right. Completely disagree with that. And if you look at all the way corporations work, people borrow money. That's why banks exist. Debt is a very good thing if managed properly. What better
Hey, Dave.
Back to Dave
Manister real quick. Dave, does ERE have any kind of policy on this? Have you ever hosted a forum on such topic? Did he go?
I think he might be gone. Let me ask a theoretical question. Let's say I borrow $400,000 from you. Or let's say I'm into you for $400,000 and I go belly up. What are you going to do?
Your customer.
What?
They still have your customer. Their risk is not to you. They're billing your customer directly.
Right. You're going to collect from the customer. Okay.
Yeah. That's how it's protected. It's a guaranteed loan is what it is. As long as they have control over your
So that's what you mean when you call it a false sense of security.
exactly.
Think of it like a check cashing loan, right? When you go to a check cashing place and you get a $1,000 loan, you know, they've got a check there. I mean, it's the same sort of theory.
Right.
And what you don't see, what they don't tell you is this, is if they are unable to collect it from your client.
Yeah, then what happens?
You're 60 days behind the eight ball. They've handled all your accounts receivable for you up front, and then you suddenly get a phone call on the 65th day and go, FYI, you owe us $100,000 because your client went belly up.
Okay, then what happens? What happens? What do you do to me?
That's where you ask the question. What
do you tell your attorney?
What do you do to me? What do you do to me? Do you come after my other assets? Do you come after my house? Do you come after my savings? Do you come after anything I own?
Your other customers.
In order to place a judgment against all those
your other
items.
If you have other customers that you were going to collect on, rather than losing the money just on that one particular customer, now you lose it across all your customers.
Right.
That was just answered as it pertains to how the money gets collected is 100% not the way it's done in our industry.
Okay,
how is it done?
The way it is done, most companies have a 90 to 120 day availability. In a worst case scenario where a company goes belly up, there is a small percentage that, and it depends on why they go belly up. If they go belly up due to fraud, the tax portion, the payroll tax portion, can be recouped from the IRS. Okay, now let's just do the math. If you did $100 and you advanced $80, you've got an $80 burden. They're not paying it. Let's assume that of the $80 that was advanced, $65 was payroll and payroll taxes. Let's just assume another 10% is the payroll taxes. Great, so now your burden is down to $70. Now, the way lenders recoup their money, they absolutely do not go and collect and liquidate your other customers. That never, ever happens. It makes no sense to do it because that money that's owed is owed anyway. It's not going to help pay down an existing debt other than the debt that's already owed on those receivables. So what they do is, and what we do and what every other lender does in the business, they look at their customer and they say, okay, look, you're in, and by the way, an absolute all-out, I'm not paying you for a big amount, very rare, it can happen, it's very, very rare, because of the steps you take before you get a big balance with a customer that a staffing company is unable to repay. So if a staffing company is small, you are never going to let their debtors go that wide and have that kind of breadth in their receivables. So you're going to minimize it to begin with. You're cutting down on the risk. Now, let's just say the worst case scenario, getting back to our $100 example, your staffing customer, me as the lender, they now owe me. It's a totally hopeless cause. We've sued. We've done everything else. We've got nothing. Customer owes me $60 in this case. What we're going to do is we're going to say, okay, look, here's the deal. You're not getting that money back. The way we're all going to benefit from this is you're going to pay it back, and you're going to pay it back over time. And that's the way it works. You can't possibly come down on a little staffing company and say, hey, listen, give me that $100,000 that we just got screwed for. It's not going to work. They'll be out of business. They're going to fly the coop, and you're going to be out $100,000. And you're going to sue that. You'd wind up suing them. You'd probably win a judgment that would never, ever get paid. So that does not work. The way it works is the way you got to be smart. You got to roll it into a loan, and you're going to take your money back. If it takes you 5 years, it's better than taking a $100,000 loss. That's the way it's done.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, Jack, really, real quick, man, the rule is you're not even supposed to be here on the after show. So I have to respectfully ask you I appreciate that additional explanation.
Yeah, but this is such a fascinating discussion.
Yeah, no, it's we can obviously give us your contact info one more time, Jack. We know your LinkedIn is marginal, but your Twitter is what?
TempWorks Jack.
TempWorks Jack. Okay, so we can address them there.
Social media.
Because it's I think it's score time pretty much. And you know, I missed last week's show, and I think the week before was it that we converted to the 1-200 scoring. Is that correct? Am I right in that, folks?
Yeah.
Okay. So Jack, thanks again for your time, and I enjoyed the second half of the show.
Thank you, folks.
All right. Okay. Bye. So let's get some scores so we can get back to business. Who wants to step up?
Well, I've never done the 100-point score. Can I go first?
Yeah.
I thought he was a great guest. I'm going to give him a 95. I thought it was a really good show. Animal. I'm going to give him an 85. Again, it was a really good show.
All right, good. Thanks, Maureen. All right, who wants to tell me who else
can
is out here?
Next?
Yeah.
Can I go next? It's Rebecca.
All right.
You know, 90 and 90. Love the guests. Love the, you know, everything that's been brought to the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Animal is great with this. This is a great topic for recruiters, I think, and especially with the business owners that everybody's out, you know,
mm-hmm.
getting that exposure and
yeah.
seeing what's out there for other, you know, other funding, but then, you know, the good and the bad of that funding. That's
mm-hmm.
great.
All right.
And the whole show. So there you go.
Ooh. Thanks, Rebecca. Who else?
I'll go. So I'm going to give Animal a 90 of out of your 100-point scale in this show. I kind of felt like he was back to his old self again, and I liked it. I wish the guest would have understood his audience a little bit better, maybe, because while there are some perm recruiters here, there are also lots of us that do put out contractors, and he didn't seem to think that that was the case. So, but he's obviously a knowledgeable guy about his business, and I like the way he disagreed with me, so I think he gave some pretty good arguments. So I'll give him a 90 as well.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Is Jeremy still here?
I'm here.
All right.
I give the let's see here. The guest gets a 90. I like what he had to say. Animal, 85. He gets a good strong B. Peanut Gallery, I think, gets a C. I think the Peanut Gallery is a little bit derogatory at times, and they don't need to be. So I know I'm
so
kind of wedging,
this question,
kind of wedging
and
that
honestly,
in there.
Did I come off as derogatory because I didn't mean to?
I don't know. Someone made a remark about his, you know, I don't know if it was his lending practices or whatever, but.
I called him John Gotti.
I'm sorry.
Oh,
well,
yeah, Gotti.
There's a couple things going on there that it's like there's a whole lot of dishing it out, not a whole lot of taking it, and it just seems kind of. Seems kind of wrong. So I, you know, I understand wanting to help the clients and or the guests, and there's a lot of strong personalities, but I think there's a line.
What's that line?
I'm gonna guess that a lending guy gets that about 19 times a week already. I think he's heard that before.
Thank goodness he's got the thick skin.
Yeah.
You know, thank goodness he does. But the line is again, you know, utilizing. Derogatory characters and comparing them to our guests. It's just, come on. You know what I mean? I don't have a problem with saying to somebody the actual issue, but don't use a derogatory guest to come up with that.
And you know what? Feel free to call out the Peanut Gallery when necessary. So
I did.
No problem with that.
I did on Twitter.
There you go. All right. Anybody else still here? Man, the usual suspects are not like Blake. I guess he's here. Rayanne. I mean, we.
Yeah,
he's going
on, isn't it?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, there's people there. They're just chicken to speak up. I think they're golfing.
Mm.
A nice day today.
All right, well, guys, I appreciate you putting up with me. You know, hey, Jerry will return next week. I'm assuming. Or if not, A Stringer, we'll pass the baton to you.
I would be honored.
All right, man. All right, guys. We'll have a great rest of the week. Anybody? Anything else?
Nope. Did a good job.
Yeah.
All right. Have a good
one. Yay!
Okay, I'm going to go to issue number one. Did anybody read Penelope Trunk yesterday? No.
No. What is it?
Well, I always wanted to write in my blog about pubic hair shaving, and I could never figure out how to put it in. But
God,
that's what
I'm going
she
there
did.
Right now.
That's what she did. She was talking about having cosmetic surgery, you know, to get ahead in your career. That's a reasonable topic, right? And then she said, "It's not the time to think about it anymore. Oh, Amy Giverts is here. Welcome, Amy." Anyway, she was talking about cosmetic surgery. I agree, reasonable topic. And then she said, listen to this, There's no time to think about it anymore because everyone else is moving ahead with surgery, just like 75% of the women in their 20s are shaving off their pubic hair. I mean, first one minute we're talking about your face, and the next minute we're talking about down there. No, Emmy, I can't hear you, okay? Oh, hold on a second. Okay, he's in now. Wait a second. Yeah, I didn't turn him on yet. Emmy, Amitai Givert, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, but make sure I can talk right into the thing. Any comments on pubic hair shaving?
No.
And your career?
I
always thought that was kind of an inappropriate question. Someone comes into an interview and you say, hey, do you shave your pubic hair? No way.
It's the way you frame the question that's important.
Yeah, okay. Next question.